Hello and welcome to the Emmy Awards. I'm your host, Emmy Cardinale, and this is my podcast where I talk about what I've been watching or rewatching once a week. If this is the first episode of mine that you stumble upon and you enjoy it, please feel free to follow me wherever you listen to podcasts so you can get notified when I upload a new episode. This is going to be the official beginning of my Bachelor Pad coverage. Starting with season one, if I enjoy it, I may do season two. I said last week that no shows that I like watch are coming back anytime soon, and I completely forgot about the Sex Lives of College Girls, and I did do a deep dive on season two, so I do think I want to do one for season three, but I don't think I'm going to do week by week recaps, because there's probably only like 10 episodes maybe, so I'll play it by ear, but I think I will just do what I did for season two, and when the whole season's over, I'll do like one episode about the entire thing, especially because the episodes tend to be shorter, the seasons tend to be shorter. Like, I feel like having it in one episode will be better. For Bachelor Pad season one, there are six episodes, so I am doing two episodes per week, and then I'll be done in 3 weeks. So this is my first week, and then two more episodes dedicated to Bachelor Pad season one, and then maybe from there I can cover the Sex Lives of College Girls. I don't really know, but I didn't want to do one episode a week. I really wanted to do multiple, so I just did two. I think that's clean. That's good. Since it's an old show, I don't want to do like one episode a week. But if you want to follow along, feel free. It's on Hulu. I don't know if it's anywhere else. Any other housekeeping I have out of the way. If you hear any background noise, I'm fostering kittens and there's only so much I can do to stop them from making noise. So that is what that is. But yeah, timestamps will be in the description. I mean, I don't know why I said that. It's episodes one and two. So if you're like, if you want to move on, or if you want to watch the episodes and you like watch episode one and then you want to come back, it'll all be down below. But yeah, I'm really excited. Bachelor Pad, I love it so much so far, and I'm so excited to talk about it. Shout out to my sister for being the one to recommend it to me. I want to look up what year this aired, because I actually didn't write that down. Okay, it started in 2010. Apparently there are three seasons, not two. I thought there were only two seasons. I'm really excited though. So for the first episode, kind of the beginning is just introducing a bunch of people. I will be honest, this was before my time in Bachelor Nation, and I don't recognize like any of them. Some of their faces look familiar, but I don't think I've seen any of their seasons all the way through. I will be honest, a lot of them were strangers to me. Tenley I recognized. I don't know if she went on to be on Paradise or if she was just like, they used her face, but like she looks so familiar to me. I did recognize her. For the most part, I really didn't recognize most of them. So they move into the mansion, they kind of get to know each other. They're all sleeping in one big room on bunk beds, which was crazy. And we find out from Chris Harrison that every week there will be a competition, and the winner of the competition gets a rose, which means they're automatically safe. They get to choose people to go on a date, and then they get to give out a rose, ensuring safety. And the guys vote on a girl they want to eliminate, and the girls vote on a guy they want to eliminate. So every week, at least one guy and one girl will go home. I'm not sure if later in the season they start to send multiple people home. I've only watched two episodes, and so far, both rose ceremonies, it's been one girl and one guy that goes home. But I don't know if later in the season they'll do like two girls and two guys go home. I don't know. We'll see. This is my first time watching it. But it's really interesting. And the reason I'm so excited to cover this is because it's such a different tonal, like it's so different tonally than like the way the Bachelor franchise is now, because there was money up for grabs. It wasn't just people like, it's okay if you're there purely strategically, and it's just really, really fascinating. And I think it would be so fascinating in this modern era. Like, screw Bachelor in Paradise. I know they're bringing back Bachelor in Paradise, but I think if they do a spinoff show, they should bring back Bachelor Pad, because I think it would be so interesting in this era we're in, where The Bachelor has become very competitive and like strategic in a lot of ways to see some of the powerhouses from like this era play this game. Like, it would be so fascinating. It's so interesting too, because there is money, but there's also like love involved, because you go on dates and like maybe you'll get love and money, but at the end of the day, the rose is more than, like, the roses are different structurally than they are in regular Bachelor shows, because you don't give roses to people purely based on if you like them. You do it, there's strategy involved. It's so interesting. And if you are somebody who likes competitive reality TV, I do really, really recommend it. Like, I'm enjoying it so much. There are like cutthroat strategic players, and there's also like a level of the romance and people genuinely like developing feelings, and then like conflict. There's sides, there's alliances, there's relationships. I'm gonna get into it, but like I really do recommend it. It's been so good so far, and I'm so excited to see how the rest of the first season plays out, and maybe I'll cover the rest if I want to. Chris Harrison does tell them that there are more women to start because there have been more seasons of The Bachelor than there have been of The Bachelorette. So it's kind of even, but he does say they'll even it out, which as of the end of episode 2, they haven't yet. The same amount of women as men have gone home every week. So I wonder if they'll bring in more men, if like, I wonder how that's going to happen, that they'll even it out eventually. Like, is there going to be an episode where, like, only women go home? Are they going to bring in more men? I'm excited to see what he meant by that, because it hasn't played out as of the 2 episodes that I watched. From the beginning, before they play the competition, the girls are kind of leaning on sending Craig home, because he was a bit of a villain on his season, and he had some beef with one of the guys, and he was apparently really mean to the guys. I know nothing of this man, because I've never seen his season. I have no idea what his history is, but they really do not like Craig. Craig is the first target of the women. They're like, if we can agree on somebody, let's agree on Craig. We also find out Melissa Rycroft, who, if you don't know, was originally, she got engaged to Jason Mesnick, and then Jason Mesnick switched, and now he is still with the woman he ended, like, he went his original second choice, but then he broke off the engagement. Anyways, there's a really iconic scene of Melissa saying, "I wish you'd just let me go." I think about that often. Anyways, so she is the host. She's not a bachelorette anymore. This is after she got married, but that's cool. I didn't know they brought her on to be like the host of this. That's cool. It's like her and Chris Harrison together, kind of. The first competition is Twister. And like, it's literally just the board game Twister. There's no bells and whistles about it. They're just playing Twister. The women are out much faster than the men in this game, but Jessie S is the last woman left in the competition. There's like 6 people left, and she's the only woman. And then slowly people keep dropping until it's just Craig, the guy that all the women wanted to send home, and Jessie S in the final. They're showing off in this game of Twister. Jessie suggests that no matter what happens, they take each other on the date, because whoever wins gets to choose somebody to go on a date. So they kind of make that deal. And while they are, before that happens, Elizabeth, Chris Harrison asks the group who they want to win, and Elizabeth says anybody but Craig M. And this is before it's just Craig and Jessie at the end. So when it's kind of like the final 6, Chris Harrison asks the group, Elizabeth says anybody but Craig. Craig was an asshole in the season, yada, yada, yada. We hate Craig. Then it's Craig and Jessie S left in the competition. They make that deal that no matter what, they'll take each other on the date. And Jessie loses. Craig M wins the competition. So he is safe for the week. He gets a rose, which means they can't vote to eliminate him. And he gets to choose 3 women to go on a date. And then from those 3, he gets to give a rose. Elizabeth and Craig talk after the competition, and he tries to win her over. It seems to be working. She says in her ITMs that she'll go on the date if he asks because it'll get her a rose and closer to the money. But it doesn't seem like she is really, like, buying what he's selling. It's more just, like, strategically, if he's going to offer me safety, I'll take it. At night, somebody hears kissing sounds. There's whispers of somebody's hooking up with somebody. And they don't know exactly who it is, but they kind of think it's Craig. And then I think Tenley starts saying that it was Michelle who was kissing Craig. And they think she did it for a rose. It becomes this whole thing. And Michelle is upset. She denies it. She's like, that didn't happen. And she's really upset at Tenley for starting this rumor. Craig gets his date card and he chooses Jesse S. Jesse S. is the only girl named Jesse. There are two guys named Jesse and then Jesse S., but she's the only girl named Jesse. I was so confused the first episode because there were a million Jessies, but then they did start giving people nicknames. Like, there's Jesse, I wrote his name and I forgot his name now. Kozaks. Anyways, they just call him his like name, and then there's Jesse P., and then Jesse S. is the only girl who's named Jesse. Anyways, Craig chooses Jesse, Gwen, and Elizabeth. Jesse because they made that deal, Gwen because she seems nice. I think Gwen, when they were meeting people, I didn't take enough notes. I don't know any of these people, so none of this means anything to me. But I think Gwen is from like one of the early seasons, and she kind of, there is one of the women, I think it was Gwen, who is a little bit older than the rest of them, and she was on like season 2 of The Bachelor. Like, she's an OG, and she just didn't know anybody else. Because an interesting thing we learned in that getting to know each other scene is that there's a group of them that do know each other. There are like reunions, or back in the day, because I don't think this happens the same way now. I think social media changed a lot, and like after Paradise and spinoff shows, Bachelor Pad was the first spinoff show and then Paradise came after. I think the nature and social media came very soon after Paradise, if not like hand in hand. It was all like rising at the same time. But I think the dynamic of alum has changed since then. But apparently in the early seasons, they had like reunions where they would like meet each other and stuff. So a lot of them had pre-existing relationships, even if it was just friendships or like being acquaintances, which was also something that felt very different to me than Bachelor in Paradise. Because Bachelor in Paradise, despite the fact that a lot of them know each other, there's like often a weird dynamic of like, oh, if you know each other, if you don't know each other. Back in the day when Paradise first started, they weren't getting to know each other. Like, you would show up on the beach and like there was no pre-existing relationship. And now a lot of them do have pre-existing relationships, and it's kind of like talked about weirdly. This was very interesting, and the way they talked about it. And I do think there's just something to be said about the fact that there is not this pressure of like being there for the right reasons or like any nefarious reasons, because at the end of the day, they're competing for money. So leading people on, or like all the things that are categorized very black and white as like wrong reasons versus right reasons, don't exist in this show. Like, it's all gray, and it makes the interpersonal relationships that much more interesting, because there's a level of awareness that this isn't just a random experience where you're dating people. Like, I think what is so difficult sometimes for me to like engage with in the Bachelor franchise is that there's no gray area. There's no acknowledgement of the fact that you can be open for a relationship and then also recognize that you're going on a TV show, and going on a TV show comes with certain aspects. Like, you're not just meeting people on, this isn't like, and even like Love is Blind, they sell these things as like experiments and you have to be there for a relationship. And it's like, but this isn't like some random blind dating experience or like some speed dating experience or a group dating experience where that's what it is. You know, there is inherently a layer that is performative or that you were like, it's weird to me that it's become so black and white of like, if you acknowledge that you can gain followers from this, if you acknowledge that you can gain notoriety from being on TV, that somehow means that you completely are not interested in a relationship. Like, do I think that there are people who purely go on these shows, purely the only goal is notoriety, and they view these relationships and these people as like pawns, and it's not real at all? Of course I do. Devin, I think from this last season of The Bachelorette, is a great example. He played the game and he played it well. And in doing that, he completely led Jen on and didn't treat her like a human being. I think there's a gray area and there's a nuance where it doesn't mean that you're not open for a connection, and it doesn't mean that the feelings you have for the lead or for one of the people in this, like, in these, like, group, like, it doesn't mean that the feelings aren't real, but it's also, like, disingenuous to act like you were simply there purely to find love, because you're also on a TV show, you know? So I think what makes Bachelor Pad so compelling for me personally as a viewer who is a fan of the Bachelor franchise is that there is this gray area. Like, there is this complex dynamic of, like, I care about this person, but also strategically, this is not good for me. Like, they talk about, like, the strategy of, like, coupling up and, like, closing yourself off to other relationships. And, like, all of those things come up. And it's, like, doesn't mean that the fact that you're, like, developing feelings for somebody isn't a thing that's happening. But there's also, like, it's just so fascinating to me. And it feels so much more real than the Bachelor franchise often does, like, in present day, because it feels like it's very gray. It's not black and white. The relationships are very complex because you're trying to be strategic while also caring about the people that you're involved with, romantically or otherwise. It's really, really interesting. Anyways, I didn't mean to go on that tangent, but I'm like, I really, really like this show. I really do recommend it. Anyways, Elizabeth says that, I don't know if I said this. Craig chooses Jesse, Gwen, and Elizabeth on the date. I do think I said that. Elizabeth says that she will do whatever she needs to do for a rose. Like, she says that in her ITMs. The date is just like, they go to a beach. There's not much action in the date. I haven't seen that many seasons of the dates now feel so much more exaggerated. Obviously, this is different because it's like a spinoff and there was no travel involved. Like, it was all in LA. And they do have some extravagant dates, but like this day portion, it was very much just like they're at a beach in LA. Like, it's nothing that crazy. Jesse says she won't kiss him just for the rose. And Elizabeth asks Jesse, because they were talking, if she's fine, if like Jesse will be mad at her if she does, and Jesse's like, I don't care. So there's very much this narrative that Elizabeth is willing to engage with Craig for the rose, regardless of how she feels about him personally. Elizabeth and Craig then talk about their experiences. They have like a one-on-one conversation, and they talk about their experiences on their respective seasons of the franchise. And he kind of defends himself. He's like, well, I honestly don't. Like, I wish I could tell you more detailed what they're referring to, but apparently Craig had some kind of beef on his season, and he kind of defends himself, and he's like, well, you said mean things about your season, and she's like, but it was different, I don't even know. But they end up seeming to find some kind of middle ground, or like common ground, where he doesn't want her to hold that against him, and she's like, I won't, and it seems good. He says in his ITMs that he wants to kiss her, but they don't end up kissing. Craig and Jesse then have a conversation, and he says that he'd defend her if her name came up for elimination, which was nice. They kind of have, like, an alliance as of this point. Like, they're aligned, like, he says he'll go to bat for her, and she says she'll go to bat for him. They kind of lock in with each other. Then back at the Bachelor Mansion, Jesse P, I think that's his last name, I don't know. There's Jesse K, which is Kovacs. And then there's Jesse S, who's the girl. And then I don't remember what the other male Jesse is called. I don't remember what his last name is. But Jesse and Natalie begin to bond. neither were really looking for love. They very much came thinking they'd placed strategically, but they were open to it and they're really bonding and they begin a bit of a romance. She says she wanted to come solely for the money, but she can't help it. Like, now she's also interested in him and she wants both, which, you know what? Power to you. Meanwhile, Juan is thinking very, very strategically. He wants to break up the couples. He's like, them being together just makes me want to break them up more. He very much says that he says at some point, if I had to choose between the love of my life or $250,000, I'm going to choose $250,000, which, you know what? I can't hate on him. And that is something that you could never see on The Bachelor. And obviously, like, the thing is, I recognize when I'm saying all of this that The Bachelor is not a game in the same way. But I just wish that there could be some kind of nuance where it's like, yes, I'm open to a relationship, but this is also a TV show. Like, why can't we acknowledge that without it being like, and I think what makes this so refreshing for me is like, it's built into it, the gray area. Because there are people playing for love and for money, you know, and that makes it so interesting and such a breath of fresh air, if that makes sense to people. Anyways, on the night portion of the date, they go to the Greek theater. It's like shut down and it's just them. And Craig has to choose one of the women and then that person gets the rest of the date. He gives Jesse the rose. They have a private concert. Meanwhile, back at the mansion, Jesse K, which is Kovacs, he is playing strategically. He doesn't want to couple up. Him and Elizabeth have a bit of a flirtation going on, but he really doesn't want to couple up because he thinks that that will, like, close off the possibilities. Like, he wants to be open to be able to date more of the women, or at least entertain more of the women, because the women decide if he is safe. And he's like, if I close myself off and I don't form other relationships, then like they'll be more willing to vote me out. So that's kind of what he's thinking. So he is not really interested in like really having any kind of solid official coupling with Elizabeth, because he thinks that that will like kind of prevent him from forming other relationships and then put him in danger. She kind of threatens him a little bit and is like, well, I have all these girls who are on my side, and if you don't treat me well, like, I can get them to turn on you, which is kind of funny. Meanwhile, Michelle is upset that Tenley started the rumor that she was hooking up with Craig. She's like really upset. She pulls her into the bathroom and we don't see the fight. It's like the door is closed. And, like, we hear rumblings in the background. Like, we hear rumblings and there's, like closed captions on the screen with, like, some of what they're saying. But, like, Tenley leaves the bathroom distraught. She says Michelle yelled at her. From what we saw, obviously, it was from a door and, like, the sound was muffled. But, like, it didn't seem that crazy. And I'm not trying, like, if she felt really, like, upset, like, then I'm not trying to judge Tenley at all. But it did seem kind of like a very extreme reaction. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I've seen too many fights on reality TV. I'm like, it didn't seem that aggressive. But also, we didn't see it. Body language says a lot. Like, depending how close she was to her, how loud it actually was. I'm not trying to discount her feelings. It Tenley, like, came out and it seemed like she had been, like, threatened or something was, like, really, really wrong. She was, like, very, very upset. Juan has a conversation with Nikki where he apologizes to her. This seems to be based off of some pre-existing dynamic they had, which they might have established early in the episode, and I may have missed it, and I'm sorry. I might, in preparation for next week, I might rewatch the beginning of the first episode now that I'm more familiar with them. Because the thing is, I was watching the first, like, the beginning of the first episode, and I didn't know who, like, half of them were, so I was just very confused and not able to, like, really keep up. I might go back and, like, try to see if I can piece together, like, the pre-existing relationships, because the Juan and Nikki dynamic, I do think, was, like, some kind of pre-existing conflict they had that he didn't want to impact his standing in the game with the other women. That is my interpretation. Chrisley is really, really wanting to play strategically. She kind of talks to the women. She's trying to, like, appeal to them about playing strategically and making sure they get out the athletic guys because they will be more of a threat to win competitions. She would slay on Big Brother. Me on Big Brother. But unfortunately, as happens sometimes in Big Brother, she said this to a group of girls, one of whom is aligned with one of the athletic guys, and Natalie runs to tell her friend Dave because she thinks that Dave is one of the guys who Chrisley would want to target. So then Dave starts wanting to target Chrisley. You can't have shit. But anyways, Elizabeth tells the girls about her issues with Jesse Kovacs and that he'll do anything for money and kind of the fact that he wouldn't solidify something, the fact that he wouldn't, like, lock in or, like, want to pursue her, like, anything like that, ends up becoming, like, a big reason the women are like, we should get him out. Because Elizabeth is aligned with a lot of the women, and she's kind of, like, not. Because what he failed to realize is he thought he needed to leave his options open because that would better his chances of being in good standing. But what he failed to realize is that women, not all of them, but, like, a lot of the women, if they're friends with another woman, they don't want to keep a guy who is, like, entertaining multiple of them. Like, they would rather, you are safer in the house if you are coupled up because they, I mean, I guess it depends. Like, if the women are not all aligned and you are, like, coupled up with somebody who's opposite of you. But, like, in theory, his strategy of, like, not coupling up because it leaves you more open, I don't think was the right approach because it doesn't really bode well for you if you're kind of being wishy-washy. Like, if there are other, like, there's a guy named Jonathan who I think his nickname is the Weatherman. He, in the two episodes I've watched, he doesn't really seem to have much of a romantic relationship with any of them, but he's not, like, leaving his options open and, like, flirting and engaging with some of them, being like, I'm not going to commit because I don't, that'll be bad for my game. Like, it's different, you know, there's a different attitude. I don't think that the women will want to keep a man around who they think is just entertaining multiple of them. Like, they don't want to keep, like, a player around. So his, like, gut instinct was wrong, and it did begin to hurt him because they started to talk about potentially voting him out. She kind of has a conversation with him where she's like, you need to act like you care about me because this is hurting you with the women. Which, you know what, it's kind of interesting, though, because she, it's not like she just says, oh, I'm really upset about this, and the women are like, we have to get him out. She's telling them he'll do anything for money. And then she goes to him, and she's like, look, they really don't feel good about you. You have to pretend like you like me. And he's like, I don't need to pretend. I do like you. And then she's like, well, then you need to express it and make it clear. And you know what? It feels a little bit, like, manipulative. Like, it feels very strategic because it's not like she's just, like, upset and the women are, like, immediately, like, let's get him out. She's very much telling the women that he's, like, not to be trusted. And then she goes to him and she's like, look, you need to change your behavior around me because they think you're not to be trusted. Like, that feels very much like she did that just so he would start, like, showing her affection, which does feel a little bit manipulative. But alas. And Elizabeth is kind of like, she doesn't really know what to do. Because I think she's really torn on the whole Kovacs thing. Because she is bad-mouthing him. But she's also like, I don't want him to go home. Anyways. For the rose ceremony, all of them, they go into a room and they vote for somebody to send home. And then Chris and Melissa give out the roses. And the last people who get roses are the last ones who are safe. Very similar, like, basically a regular rose ceremony, except, like, it's interesting because Paradise has a different rose ceremony in that, like, there's less women or less men, and then the men give out the roses and, like, only women go home once a week. This time it's like, oh, a woman and a man goes home every week and they collectively decide, and then Chris and Melissa are the ones who give out the roses. Anyways, the last to receive roses are Chrisley and Kovacs, which means Michelle and Juan go home. Michelle went home because of the nail in the coffin regarding the whole Henley thing. Juan, I think, went home partially because he was playing too strategically. Like, he was talking very much about, like, I don't care about, like, anybody. I'm here for the money. That and his history with Nikki, I do think, hurt him. But I think it was just kind of, like, they really wanted to get Craig out and they couldn't. So then they had to pivot and he was, like, a good option. I don't think Juan did anything particularly in the episode that pointed to why he went home. But alas, as Michelle is leaving, Jonathan, the weatherman, that's his nickname, makes some really bad comments about Michelle. I really didn't like it. He said that, like, there wasn't enough space for her multiple personalities, something about a straitjacket, like, just calling her crazy in every way. Like, okay, Jonathan, pack it up. Love the casual ableism in 2010, but alas. And that's where episode one wraps. So episode two opens up post-rose ceremony. There are 7 men left and 10 women left. Kovacs and Elizabeth talk about doing damage control regarding their relationship. They kind of bother me. Like, I don't care for the Kovacs-Elizabeth dynamic. I'm like, you guys, like, it doesn't, I don't really care for either of them. I gotta be honest. Kovacs begins to realize that being in a couple is better strategy than not, because Elizabeth has women on her side, and if the women don't like her because of him not being with Elizabeth, that can hurt him, as I previously said. So he is like, yeah, let's lock in. Natalie and Jesse B continue to be in a couple. They're very into each other. He says it's not strategy, but it is helping. And there begins to be, in this episode, conversations kind of about sides of the house. You know, if this was Big Brother, it would be like alliances, you know? So they call themselves the insiders versus the outsiders. The insiders are kind of the ones who have all these pre-existing relationships. You know, there's like a clique of people who kind of are good together. And then the people who kind of are from like a variety of seasons, they don't have like that pre-existing relationship. Those are the outsiders, is kind of the dynamics. The second competition is a pie eating contest. It's split up between women and men. So the women compete and then the men compete, and there's a winner from each. And then each winner gets to choose 3 people to go on a date, and then they get to give out a rose. So there are going to be 4 people total who are safe this week, 2 women and 2 men. So that is where we stand. Gia really hates pie, she says in her ITM, but she feels like she's an easy target because she has a boyfriend. That's another dynamic which is really interesting, because the prize is money. It's not a relationship. The relationships play a role, obviously, but prize is money. So there is somebody who is in a relationship, Gia, which is a very interesting dynamic. So she's worried that she's an easy out because she's in a relationship. So she feels like she needs to win the competitions, even though she really doesn't like pie and she's not excited about the pie eating contest. Chris Lee bows out of the competition because she had to have her gallbladder removed like a year before, and she can't risk it because apparently her body can't like break down fats or something. I don't know. I think that's a totally valid reason not to do a competition. She's like, I want to play, but I don't want to end up in the hospital. Like, valid. And then Dave, who I don't think I've mentioned at all, but he is a player in this episode. Dave, actually, no, I did mention him, because he was the one who said that he wanted to get Chris Lee out last episode after Chris Lee was being strategic. Natalie told Dave. Anyways, Dave, maybe David too, I don't know. Anyways, he makes some comment about how she like should have sucked it up. I don't know. That was annoying to me. Like, maybe he didn't know the history about her gallbladder, but it's like, shut up. Really bothered me. I was like, she doesn't want to put herself in physical danger by like trying to like devour a pie. God forbid. God forbid somebody doesn't like. Anyways, that was annoying to me. The women start first and they kind of are in a, they're doing okay at first, and then they really start to struggle. Like, they start vomiting, they have to bring out buckets. Tenley is leading, but she like literally throws up into her pie at some point and then just keeps eating, which was so gross. Wes helps Gia, like he's really encouraging her throughout the entire thing. Towards the end, it's between Gia and Tenley, And Gia pulls out the win. She takes it home, and I was super happy for her because she said she wanted to win, and she won. The guys feel confident going into the competition, and then it's harder than they expect. They're literally, like, two bites in. They're like, this is disgusting. We can't keep doing this. And it really pissed me off that Dave guy said in his ITMs that he had five bites and then he knew that he couldn't finish the pie. Like, shut the fuck up about the girl who had to bow out because she doesn't have a gallbladder. Like, literally shut up. Anyways, Jonathan, who they called the weatherman for some reason, is doing the best despite being the underdog. Like, literally in the ITMs before they start the competition, he's like, there are guys here who are like 200 pounds that could easily eat these pies really quickly. I'm the smallest one here. Like, I am not going to win. And then he does win, which, you know what, I was happy for him. The ableist comment from the first episode I didn't like, but you know, I love an underdog, so congrats to him for winning. Jesse S and Craig are aligned, and he wants to go on a date so he can get the rose and be safe. They're kind of talking, and they're kind of, as I said for the first episode, they're aligned and they kind of strategize about what their game plan is. Then Gia and Jonathan strategize about who to keep and who to take on the date in order to then be able to give somebody a rose that would be smart strategically, because it's not just choosing who you want to go on a date. If you want to give somebody a rose, the only opportunity you have is on the date. So you need to maybe choose somebody that you're interested in, but also choose somebody who you want to keep safe by giving them the rose. So they kind of figure out the numbers they have, the insiders versus the outsiders. They're in the outside, like they're outsiders, and they kind of talk about who they have to get, who are kind of like swing votes in order to make sure that they don't lose their numbers and the people they want to send home go home and they don't like get chipped off one by one. So that's kind of like their game plan. Jonathan's date is first, and he chooses Gwen, Peyton, and Ashley. Kovacs realizes, he says this in his ITMs, that Jonathan chose women who don't have like some kind of relationship, who are more kind of, again, able to be numbers. And he's like, I shouldn't underestimate him. Like, he's thinking strategically, which he is. And he's starting to see Jonathan as a strategic threat. It's a painting date. They do these all the time on Paradise, where it's kind of like you literally paint with your body or whatever. So that's kind of the date portion of, that's the day portion of the date. Not much to note there. Chrisley back at the mansion begins to panic because she knows that she's like not long for the house. She's like on the outs, and she was hoping that she would get to go on the date so she could maybe be safe. And that's not an option for her. And she's like, like, she doesn't think she's going to win. But at this point, she doesn't want one of the insiders to win. She wants somebody in her group to win. And we kind of have the lines established. They're like the cool kids who are like the insiders, which is Wes, Dave, Kovacs, Kipton, Natalie, Tenley, and Elizabeth. They're kind of a little group. And then the rest of them are on the outs. Gia's in this conversation with Chrisley, and she realizes that she has the power to keep somebody safe. So she's like, if we keep Craig safe, that removes their option for who they want to send home. So I'll take Craig on the date, I'll give him the rose, and then they won't have that easy person to vote out. So that's kind of like the game plan. And that will increase their numbers. They'll keep somebody who they can pull in safe, because Craig is not going to work with that other side of the house. Jonathan, on the night portion of the date, talks to Peyton about the groups and the dynamics, and she's on board to join the outsiders and stick with that group and be loyal to that group and make sure that the other side gets picked off first. Ashley is more hesitant because she has friendships with people like Elizabeth and Tenley, and she is really not super down, but at the end of their conversation, they do agree. She does agree that she should stick with that side. Like, she just kind of say, yeah, I'll do what you want to do. Then he has a conversation with Gwen, and it's not really strategic at all. It's just them getting to know each other because he actually likes Gwen. He gives Gwen the rose, and she says in her ITMs that romantically they're never gonna happen. Meanwhile, Ashley, not getting the rose, begins to question her allegiance to Jonathan because she's like, he didn't give me the rose. I don't know what I'm going to do now, which is kind of funny. After the next day, after the date, Gia and Jonathan talk about like the state of the game, and he's like, okay, I have Ashley on board. I got Paige on board. We're good. And she is like, you do not have Ashley. Ashley does not like you. Ashley is not going to vote with us. You do not have Ashley. Peyton is pulled in and she's like, yeah, no, she was lying to us last night. She's not on our side. So they begin to question, well, he begins to question Ashley's allegiance to him and to their group. Gia's date is next and she brings Wes and Craig. And then she announces that she doesn't know who she's going to bring as her third person. So she is just going to write all of the guys' names and pick their names out of a bowl. But she reveals in ITMs that the only name she wrote was Jesse Beck. Jesse B. Oh my God, that's his last name. Jesse B. Jesse Beck's. She just wrote his name over and over and over again. And she picks his name. So those are the three that are going. Wes, Craig, and then Jesse B. Gia, going into the date, wants to be strategic. Jesse is like being very charming, but she doesn't want his charm to make her stray from her strategy. So after her conversation with Jesse, she's like still giving Craig the rose. Meanwhile, back at the mansion, Kovacs and Elizabeth hook up. He's kind of, they have like a tense conversation and then they hook up and it's like, I really don't care about their dynamic. I have to be honest. Also, them hooking up is relevant for a thing later. I'm not just like, that's relevant because it causes a bit of tension later. I genuinely don't care about like the status of their relationship. It's annoying to me. But anyways, like it's just like I don't feel like they like each other. I don't feel like he likes her. I'm not invested. And not just because this is a Bachelor franchise show from 10 years ago. Not even 15 years ago, 14 years ago, and there's no way they're together. Not just because of that, but because it's like really annoying me. Anyways, alas. Wes, then back on the date, Wes and Gia have a conversation and he kind of like tells her she's amazing. He really likes her. He kind of confesses his feelings. She's conflicted because she really likes him too. And he's like such a good guy, but also she's in a relationship and also she wants to give like strategically, she's like, I need to give my rose to Craig. She's conflicted. Ultimately, she gives her rose to Wes, which puts a big old thorn in the plans of the outsiders for who they are going to send home because Craig is now open for the insiders to get him out. Meanwhile, after the date, Jesse S and David kind of flirt, hook up. They just make out. They don't. And again, that's not relevant. But it kind of becomes a thing because Chris Lee starts to notice that Jesse S is kind of playing both sides, you know. And Jesse is, at least it seems, kind of consciously like leaving her options open, which I have nothing against. I love a floater on Big Brother. I play all the sides you need to play, girl. I don't care. However, Chris Lee rats her out to Kipton and is like, you can't trust Jesse S. And she kind of hopes that this will maybe get Jesse S to be the target instead of her. Jesse Beck, after the date, he ends things with Natalie. She's really upset. He says in his ITMs that, like, he likes her and he didn't mind them being grouped together, but they're on different sides and he kind of, like, doesn't want to be grouped with her, which is such an interesting dynamic. It's like, we're not in the same alliance. We can't continue this relationship because I don't want to be grouped with somebody I'm on the opposite sides with. Super fascinating. Super fascinating. I thought that was so interesting. And again, it's what I was saying earlier about like the gray area where the relationship dynamics are influenced by the game. Like they're impacted by the game. Their connection is halted a bit by the game dynamics and not wanting to stray from the side that you're on or be disloyal to the group that you're loyal to because of other motivations. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. The girls kind of talk out the way the votes are going to lie and they think that the votes are going to be 50-50, are likely going to be 50-50 in terms of which guy they're voting out. Their side is going to vote Kipton out. And the other side is going to vote Craig out. And then Gia, if it's 50-50, the woman with the rose breaks the tie and vice versa. So Gia's like, worst case, it's 50-50 and I break the tie and I send Kipton home. Then they're all kind of gathered in the room together before the voting and the rose ceremony, and Chris Harrison checks in with the group and it's super, super awkward. At some point, there's like a conversation about the different relationships, and Elizabeth says to Tenley, I don't really see the difference between my relationship with Kovacs and your relationship with, I don't even remember who, somebody who she's very close friends with. And she says, well, there's a physical difference. And it's kind of like awkward. And then Elizabeth is like, I feel kind of rude now. And then Tenley starts crying, which this is what made me kind of be like, I'm not trying to like discredit her feelings. And I'm a very emotional person, okay? This is not to like discount somebody's emotions. But like this reaction to like this kind of awkward moment made me really be like, how intense was Michelle really? Or how much is it just like Tenley being really sensitive? And I'm not like shitting on her for being sensitive. It just like doesn't feel like, it feels a little bit confusing to me. I'm like, what do you mean that this interaction, if anything, Tenley was kind of rude to Elizabeth. Like they're talking about like their loyalties with people in the house. And Tenley's like, well, I'm not like hooking up with this person is basically what she's saying. And then there's like an awkward pause. Elizabeth doesn't even say anything like angry back. And then Tenley's the one who starts crying. I found it kind of odd, but alas. Let me move on. At some point, there's some vague stuff to be said about people having issues with each other. And Jessie S is like, if people have issues, they should just like go to each other. Like if somebody's saying something about me, I would want to know. And there's like an awkward moment where they zoom in on somebody who's kind of making a face like, yikes, this is awkward because people are saying things about Jessie S. And she's like literally basically on the chopping block, completely unbeknownst to her. Then Elizabeth talks to her little group and she says the insiders should stick together. Dave confronts Jessie S about her playing both sides. And she is kind of like, I'm not doing that. And she says in her ITMs, we're like guinea pigs here. As the game goes on, your strategies change. I thought that was interesting. Like, I thought it was interesting her being like, we're the first people to play this game. Like, the strategies are going to change. Like, things are changing. And you know what? That's fair. She's right. Then we see her voting, and she says she decides to vote for Craig because she wants to prove to Dave that she's not lying and that she is loyal to him and not to Craig, because she is kind of going between both of them, you know? He's like, I don't know if I can trust that you'll choose me over Craig. And this is her way of being like, see, I'll choose you over Craig. The guys are leaning now towards Chrisley because Jesse may be an ally. Like, some of them are actually now leaning towards Chrisley because Jesse S may not. Like, Chrisley is more of a wild card. So that's kind of like, will it be Chrisley or will it be Jesse S? Chrisley realizes she's in danger and that Jessie S might be safe, and she kind of starts to freak out. And then the big like end cliffhanger of the episode is that Nikki and Kipton have an emotional talk because he kind of knows that he's in danger, and she feels really bad about voting him out, but she also like wants to be true to her word. And it's kind of like left on a cliffhanger of like, did she vote for Kipton to go, or did she vote for Craig? Because she, with her group of the outsiders, their plan is to vote Kipton. And so she's kind of a swing vote. If she votes to keep Kipton and she votes against Craig, then her side loses numbers and she kind of burns that bridge. But she has a friendship with Kipton and it's very difficult for her emotionally. Again, super interesting interpersonal relationships playing into the game. Like, that's all really, really interesting. I enjoy that. So that's kind of an interesting cliffhanger. It's like, will she go with her heart? Will she play strategically? The last four who haven't received roses are Chrisley, Jessie S, Kipton, and Craig. And the last woman to get a rose is Chrisley, and the last man to get a rose is Kipton. So Jesse S. and Craig are going home, which is kind of sad. They were like in the final two in the first episode and they like made a deal with each other and like, boom, they're gone. I did feel kind of bad for Craig. I mean, I don't know anything about him. Maybe he was the worst person ever on his season, but it does suck. And like, Gia did feel bad because she's like, the plan was to save him and it like went off book. And again, it's why it's so interesting that like the fact that all of these people are coming off of like a dating show and the way they know each other is all like, it's just such an interesting dynamic because their first experience with reality TV and the reason they're all in this franchise is because they went on pursuing love. And then like, that's why I think it would be so interesting because it's like, it's just a very different dynamic. And I even think like you see, obviously it's a different iteration, but like the traitors, there's such a different dynamic between like people who come from different franchises. And I think what makes Bachelor Pad so interesting for me is that there's this layer of like the for the right reasons, the genuine relationships mixed into this competition, money motivated show that I think would be so interesting to watch in this day and age where it's become so black and white of like any ulterior motive except being like madly in love with the person who's the lead is like viewed poorly. Like you would, and like, yeah, I guess he was kind of a bad guy, Juan, who was like, I would rather leave with the money, but it's like, at least he could say that. And like, I don't know. It would just be so interesting to see this in this day and age. Would it ever happen? I don't know, but it's so interesting so far. I'm really excited for the next 2 weeks. Next week, I will cover episodes 3 through 4, and then the next week after that will be episodes 5 and 6, which are the last two, and that will wrap up my coverage of this. Will I cover season 2? I don't know. I'll figure it out as the week goes on. But yeah, this episode should be out like Friday or Saturday, and then I have another special edition of the Emmy Awards coming out sometime this following week, maybe like Wednesday. So stay tuned. And then the next, like, and that's separate from like my, anyways, you'll see. That'll be out like mid next week. And then I'll have another episode again for the next weekend. And we'll just keep chugging along. Thank you so much for tuning in. It really means a lot. Sorry if this episode's a little bit shorter than normal, but hopefully it's a decent length. But I have another, again, this week is kind of going to have 2 episodes, so hopefully that'll balance it out. Thank you so much for tuning in. It means a lot. Make sure you follow me over at Listen Podcast. And if you like the episode and you haven't seen Bachelor Pad, you should watch the first 2 episodes and then, like, watch the next 2. And it'll be like a book club where we, like, read the same chapters at the same time and talk about it. So, anyways, thank you so much. It means a lot. And you'll hear from me soon. Bye.